Hi everybody, welcome to season 4, episode 3 of the Hard Truth Inside the Football Industry podcast with me, Philip Eidson, and Dara McAnthony, chairman and co-owner of Peterborough United. Dara, a good couple of... first of all, we decided that we'd wait to Wednesday to record so we could get a couple of games in this week. And what a couple of good results it was.
Yeah, to be fair, I think it worked better that you can cover, obviously, your Saturday and your Tuesday's results. So if we go in a bit posh, so we had Charlton on Saturday. You know, big club in League One, obviously under new ownership. Great first home games. We had a crowd. It was 9,500. I stood to my word with all the Charlton fans who'd missed the previous game. A lot of them, you know, they came and whatever, took me up on that option. One of them kind of cat and mouse games first half, you know, neither team really dominating. We scored just before half time and then never looked like conceding. We just kind of like were solid, had chances. Probably in the last 5 minutes of the game, we've missed four fucking sitters, which is fine because you want to create chances, you know, put the game away. So really, really good game. Good win. Good to get off the start. Good clean sheet. Obviously, probably the only negative was Jando came on, Jando Fuchs. He's been working pre-season and he's done something to his groin. You know, where it looks like we're finding out whether we're operating or not, but he's probably going to be missing for 4 months. So that was the only negative probably of the day. You don't want to lose, you know, we have a squad that's designed in positions where we're not overstacked, but, you know, we don't want to lose a player like that. So that was a bit of a body blow. But yeah, really, really good. Charlton were decent. Probably have a lot of business still to do themselves. Window. What else about that game? You were asking me before, a lot of the Charlton people, obviously, who are now there, used to work for me. You know, Jim Rodwell was our CEO, Ed Warwick, you know, did consultancy stuff for us. So good to catch up with Jim. I like Jim. Jim is their CEO. He came in as usual, you know, bowled us brass sitting down. We chewed the fat. He was telling me about, obviously, the ownership now at Charlton, and they seem to be on a good pathway. You know, then he's trying to obviously buy my striker off him before he leaves the office. So I threw him out and said he couldn't afford him. But no, it was good banter. It was good fun. We won that game. And then obviously on to Tuesday, you know, away at Barnsley. You think Barnsley are going to be up there? You know, even if they sell their players like they did last summer, they're still going to be up there. They recruit well. They're like us. They're well run. I think they won their previous home game 7-0. Tough place to go on a Tuesday night. And I fucking love the game. Forget the results. Just love the game. Loved it from us, loved it from them. I thought it was a great game. Good, two good footballing teams. You know, first probably 55 minutes, they had some wonderful chances. Our goalie was fantastic. We had some fucking unbelievable chances that we kind of spurred. They scored a freak goal. And then it was like, I was thinking, as I was smiling, I'm thinking to myself, okay, now we'll see what the young guns are all about. Then we'll see if they, you know, because previously, the last couple of years, we folded like a cheap fucking suit when we went behind. And I couldn't stop smiling. Yes, the goals helped and winning helped, but it was just the fact that it didn't bother them. It didn't lay a glove on them. We stuck to the way we played. We played lovely football. We cut them open. We probably created five of the best chances you're ever going to see in your life. Barnsley's goalies made some fucking unbelievable saves. We've missed open goals. Don't care. Didn't bother me. Before, I'd be spitting fucking bullets. I'd be moaning. I'd probably be criticised. Don't care. It was fine because we just kept at it and kept at it and kept at it. Then we scored an equaliser. Then we scored 90 seconds later. And then we killed the game off probably 5 minutes after that when Ricky came on and then set up a goal for Kwame. Yeah, it was just good. It was, and then saw the game out. Just, yeah, really, really good performance. You know, it's early days. Look, the manager would be like, it's foot in my head. I'm not getting carried away. I'm just enjoying watching us play. I'm enjoying watching these young players enjoy doing what they're doing. They're in it together, win, lose, or draw. You know, and I said this last week, we talked about young guns igniting, you know, and there's still a lot more to come. And there's going to be some great days. There's going to be some crappy days. That's football. And I know our fans got very excited. And listen, I'm never going to tamper expectations from fans. I won't say they want to moan about the team. They can moan about the team. If they want to call the team, you know, the second coming of the next big team, no problem. My job is very simple. It's keep my own feet on the floor, enjoy what we're doing, believe in our coaches at all levels, you know, and make sure we're playing good football, we're recruiting the best young talent, we're moving the best young talent on when we need to be to do. That's the way we're going to operate. We're going to live within our means. We're not going to be foolish. We're not going to overspend. And we're going to give everybody a lot of patience and a lot of time to do their best. Like, you know, we looked after all the coaches this summer purposely because we wanted to make sure they're here for the long term. They're going to improve those young players. And that's the template we've set. I was more probably upset that we lost an under 21 game than I watched. I watched the under 21 beating 3-0. I was actually fucking steaming about that because we're far better than that at 21 level. So I'm not going to lie to you. That fucking irked me big time. Do you know what I mean? So, and I had to hold myself back. It was like, fuck, we've got another game in a few hours' time, you know? And our 18s lost as well. So no, really, really good few days. You know, obviously Derby, a big Derby game against Northampton coming up. And then obviously Derby at home, Portsmouth away twice. This is League One.
Doesn't get easier.
It's just like another championship. It's just big clubs. You know, Barnsley, you know, you would dare say have been in the championship like us recently. You know what I mean? We're playoff finalists last year. Our favourites again this year to be up there doing well. It's a fascinating League One. You know, and special mention to Steve Evans. I told you, Bradford fans, didn't I tell you?
3-3.
What did I fucking say to you guys at Bradford over a year ago? What did I say? Go and hire Steve fucking Evans.
He will get you into the championship, I think was your quote.
If you can do this with Steve, imagine what he would have done with a mighty Bradford. Fucking, he is. Yeah, listen, that's Stevie. So many ex-Peterborough players. So, not a team you want to play early on.
No.
You know, they're well-drilled, physical. And that's just Steve Evans all over. And listen, I'm sure he's pushed them to the brink this summer in spending and players and new players. It'll be on it now. The minute they're up there, they've won all these games. The owner, Phil Wallace, the ownership of Stevenage. I want more players. And then they're going to have to back him because that's what Stevie does. And that's why he's a good manager. And that's why I said at the time, Hakeem Bradford, drop all the previous historical crap. If you want to get out of that league, fucking go and hire him. Anyway, that ship sailed and you're happy with Sparky and, you know, Stevie's doing his thing in Stevenage. But again, you know, fucking credit to him. And I have a wry smile, you know, when I see it, you know, and then the pictures of him. And
until you play him and, you know, it's like your bogey team at the moment. Is like a couple of years ago, didn't he beat you twice?
Fucking last year, they beat us three times, last I think.
Year, yeah.
The Cup, the EFL trophy. Listen, we've had some battles. I think the promotion season, we battered them, jailed them away. And then they came when we were in the run into going up and he fucking... They had one shot in 98 minutes and fucking beat us, but we battled. He wound my manager up and fucking, yeah, look, I don't know when we play Stevenage, but yeah, that's going to be fun to watch on the sidelines. The only shock I'm in is that Mike Gaffer's got more yellow cards than him at the moment. So
don't know how he's going to stay on the sideline with this new rules.
He's obviously fucking letting Reigns go crazy and he's obviously reigning it in himself, you know? So I don't know, but listen, fair play to the ownership of Stevenage. They backed him. I know what they paid for some of the players that left us. They weren't cheap acquisitions. Steve will like to say they were. They weren't. You know, and they've really backed him. And I think when you back a manager like him, you know what you get. And majority of the time, it's success. So no surprise from me at all. And yeah, so it is what it is. But again, nobody gets excited about three games in, four games in. I've said this before.
So you're not table watching already then?
My chief of transportation, I call Rob my driver that, you know, because it's a more respectful term. My chief of transportation keeps saying to me, oh, I'm like, I give a fuck. I couldn't, seriously, like, I said this, I think, the last podcast, no? Back in March.
I know.
If someone had showed me the table, we were fucking 10 points out of it with one spot left to go. It's fucking, you know, it wouldn't have been relevant looking then because you'd be just saying, oh, the season's finished. You know, we went in on the final day. So, no, I'm not table watching. I don't table watch any of the leagues. Obviously, I do my due diligence on results and statistics and data. I know teams who are doing well. I couldn't even tell you who's top of League One. Do you know what I mean? I, you know, Rob's told me we're in the top six. Great, cool. Yeah, but the season won't finish now unless there's some new strain of fucking COVID that fucking some teams can get voted through. So, I'm joking, taking the piss. So, now too early. So, that's Peterborough. It's been a really good few days. Anything else to cover on Peterborough?
First of all, well, let's talk about Peterborough first. So, you know, you're getting a cohesive young squad doing really well. I read Darren talk about the fact that even if you'd have lost, he'd have been really happy with how kind of they came together, did the team. We've got a couple of weeks left to the transfer window. It's no secret that Johnson Clark Harris is on the transfer list still. Ronnie Edwards is courting interest. Like, what are you expecting in the next couple of weeks?
I'm expecting, look, there's already two clubs in our league in for Clark Harris, and there's actually a club that's come from out of nowhere that's also in for Clark Harris. So there's no lie there. You know, I have a figure. If the figure's not hit, he won't go. I've made that very clear, regardless of what newspapers and articles want to be written about our demise and everything else financially. He won't go unless I get the figure. if you want to buy the best goal scorer outside the championship, you have to pay. I'm not asking for 3-4 million, whatever else that's been quoted. I'm being realistic for a player. But at the same time, he's the GOAT in League One. He is. He's the greatest, one of the greatest goal scorers of all time. So, you know, I went and paid a lot of money for him 3 years ago because we wanted promotion. So my response to those people trying to take the mick, if you want to do what I did, put your money where your mouth is. You're buying a target man, prolific goal scorer in the prime of his career. So other than that, he'll stay. And I'm very relaxed about that. Obviously, we have a big meeting next week, Thursday, because I traveled to the UAE at the end of the month to Saudi and Qatar on business. And before I go, because I'll be there during the window, but I'll obviously be working. Before I go, we're having a big recruitment meeting at the training ground with me, Baz, the manager, two of the assistant coaches, my analyst, and the club's analyst. And on those lists is five targets for if Clark Harris goes, five targets for if Ronnie Edwards goes, five targets for if Josh Knight goes, five targets for if Harrison Burrows goes, you know, whatever. So that hopefully we're not caught cold. Now, can I guarantee that won't happen? I can't, because if somebody comes in with an hour to go with an unbelievable offer, you know, we're going to do a deal. The manager's aware of that. The great thing we agreed in May, June was, let's be really honest about everything. And let's not, you know, lie to ourselves. And he's well aware. And I've enjoyed hearing him say, I think the BBC or somebody asked him, what if Clark Harris goes? You don't have time. And he said, well, we'll go with something else what we've got. I love that side to the manager. He's not getting stressed or worried about, I need another striker, I need this, I need that. The manager's even said to me, if we don't get a striker, potentially he'll get another left. He wants me to get him another left-sider, and then he will utilise Ricky or Efron Mason-Clark as a striker. He actually sees that as an exciting prospect if we don't land the striking target we want, because that can happen too. Other clubs won't sell. It becomes too expensive. Maybe the player doesn't want to come. You know, the one thing's for sure, our next number nine, you know, will be of a certain ilk, a certain style, a certain way, and obviously be younger to mould in with what we're doing. So, but we won't rush that either. If we have to wait till January to do that, we'll do that, and we'll use other players. That's the new dawn of Peterborough, and I don't want to disenfranchise the fans, and I don't want Alan Swan writing articles and headlines saying Posh won't buy a new striker and they'll have to go with what they've got. But we made a conscious effort that, you know, we were going to, A, allow our younger players to play in some of these positions. We were going to do it. We had to do it with our squad. You know, the Jando Fuchs one, we've lost him for 3 or 4 months potentially. You know, the natural inkling is, do we go and get another player? It's not really affordable. You know, unless we can get somebody on loan on a freebie from a Prem club, you know, it's just not budget-wise or salary-wise. It has to be one out, one in type thing. So, you know, we all agreed that, or someone from the 21s. That's just the way we're going to operate. And if that upsets people, so be it. It's not because we're skint. It's because we're being, what would the right word be? We're being diligent. We're doing things the right way. You know, after overspending for so long, we're just being low. You just can't keep stacking players up. I saw somebody the other day. If you sign a right back, if you do this, I'm like, no. Joe Tomlinson can play left back, right back. Charlie O'Connell can play centre half, right back. Josh Knight can play right back. We have the best young right back we've had in probably two generations of Peterborough, and James Donnelly. Is he ready? Probably not. But he's getting ready via the 21s. He will in the EFL Trophy games, you know. And again, somebody we have high aspirations for. So it's one of them things where we have to be reactive. The Ronnie Edwards ones will be the same thing. We know factually three different Premier League clubs will be making a bid. But what they're not going to do is sign him before they've signed other targets. Because again, it's a case of, to your fans in the Prem, if you're signing a player of that age from lower leagues, it's like, geez, you're signing him before anyone? No, that's going to come down the line. But boy, oh boy, Phil, he's on a different level. Forget all me, the hype and everything. He's on a different fucking level. I mean, wow. I mean, that kid, my biggest fucking gutter is my beloved club are never at any of our games. They never. I could show you a list of scouts from our 21s game yesterday. You know, it was Man United, it was Chelsea, it was Arsenal, Villa, Newcastle, Brighton, Bournemouth, you know, whatever else. My Liverpool, not there. You know, a lot of our games. I even show you the scouts that went to Barnsley last night to watch our players. I can tell you, show the scouts. I think on Saturday, Liverpool were finally there, but I believe it was probably to watch a Charlton young player because they bought a lot of players from Charlton. They haven't been at my club. I don't know if they've got a home for me or not, but it's like, I'm a Liverpool fan. What are you doing? Like, want to buy the best young talent? We've got some fucking unbelievable young talents. Not I'm trying to sell them all, but if someone else is in, you've got to be in. you know, maybe if Chelsea ring us about someone, they'll jump in.
The player will have to want it.
Yeah, yeah. So it's really interesting watching the scout list get bigger and bigger, obviously because we're probably the youngest team in the league and we're now, you know, again, we're going under the radar. We're not in a lot of the teams of the week. There's not a lot written in the – I read the EFL thing on a Sunday, you know, Chris Dunlavy does a lot of articles, the players to watch, and mention any Peterborough players in his article, mentions a few lone players from the Premier League and the lower leagues, a couple of veteran players, but none of the best young talent that we've got in our squad, which is a shocker. And we're not really in teams of the weeks. I think finally today was the first time the gaffer was manager of midweek, and we've beaten obviously a championship team that's come down. We've beaten obviously a big London club, you know, and again, we're doing that with a team at an average age of 22.6 or something. So, you know, keep that maybe under the radar. That's fine. So how do I know what's going to happen the next 2 weeks? There will be moves. You know, Chimanga, we've had two clubs obviously come in and try and buy him as well. Strikers are a premium, put it that way. There's not a lot of strikers who are good goal scorers, and we're fortunate that we have a couple of them in the building. So, yep. And by the way, fuck me almighty, I'll tell you one player who's just absolutely, Archie Collins has made Hector, I mean, I have to say his story, like, I have to give credit to one of my gem scouts, and his dad will love me saying this, they want a fucking pay rise. Obviously, 2 years ago, I had three gem scouts working for me personally. When we went down and got relegated, I had to let two of them go and I kept one. But one of them, I got a job in our academy, as he's very good, obviously, at his job. And his dad's a friend of mine. He didn't get the job for that reason, but he's very good at scouting. And he's the one who kind of drilled at me about Hector, signing Hector. You got to sign Hector. You got to sign Hector. And I'd seen all the reports. I'd seen the footage. I'd seen the data. You know, this 20-year-old raw player. Leighton Orient. I saw all the comments from Orient fans about him. It was kind of like hit and miss. And when we had a recruitment meeting, it was the May of the first season back in League One with McCann and Byrne and me and Barry. Everyone in the room was asking, is he Cypriot? Where is he from? What is he? But then I put the footage up. And to be fair to McCann and his assistant, they were on the footage, they were sold straight away because of his physicalities and everything. And obviously we paid over 400 grand for him. And again, as a club, we don't get a lot of credit that we actually write checks for like 400 grand for 20-year-olds from League Two, who at the time, I think all the Orient fans were fucking sending me delighted messages that we fucking...
Thank you, Cads.
Yeah, no word of a lie. He has the tangibles to play as high as he wants. Premier League teams love physical midfielders. He's got something a lot of our other midfielders have never had, including Jack Taylor. He's physically big. And what he's now doing, the gaffer has turned him into, he's taken all that potential because the gaffer was a midfield player. And he's given the boy belief to be, he can be as good as he can be. Him, Joel, and Randall in that midfield, touch wood, long may they continue, playing off the charts. But I won't be selling Hector in this window unless it's a Casado type transfer fucking battle. No way.
He's got room to run. He's got more potential to.
He's a brilliant man. He's a great character. He was in the running for captaincy. He's a fucking leader. He's adding all the things to his game. Even if he has a bad game, he's fucking working his bollocks off. Really, really happy with that one, you know, again. But again, showing us as a club where we're braver than a lot of other clubs where you wouldn't pay 400 grand for a player who played 30-odd times for Leighton Orient and not really a goal or an assist. And a certain, you know, he's a, there's so much more in him, loads more. So very excited, you know what I mean, about that, yeah.
So the other question I wanted to ask is, we talked at the end of the season about your superstitions maybe getting the better of you. So how are you managing your superstitions so far this season? You're not been walking out, taking a lead yet.
No, I'm not at 1-0. I'm not going to lie. I've dropped all my little OCD and syncrasies during games where I tap something three times or I do something, a sub comes on, or I do something over a corner. I've stopped that. My only thing I did let myself down last night was a 3-1. I walked.
Mm-hmm.
Only because I had 100% record last year. You couldn't count the Wednesday second leg. Because we were, you know, that wasn't us leading. It was a different story. So, no, I did it. It was only 10 minutes though, but I didn't, you know. So now the test will be when I go to the Cobblers or any other game, you know, when we hit that two, I walk? And I guess because of that hard side of superstition, OCD, if I stay and something goes wrong, I'm going to fucking hate myself. So I might continue walking until it leads us all the way to the Premier League.
you need to wait until an EFL, you know, group game.
Correct. I'll break it with an EFL trophy game, hopefully. Yeah. So that'll be the next thing. You're absolutely correct. Do you know what I mean? But I'm not going to lie. 90% of the superstitions and stuff I do, I'm working on, I've got rid of, and thank goodness, because I'm like an absolute lunatic when I do this crap.
Well, long may that continue.
So let's talk Bradford.
Yeah. So on the face of it, you know, two decent results. We beat Colchester 2-1 at home. We talked on Friday about them being no mugs.
What were your thoughts on Colchester?
Yeah, so Colchester, they gave us a good game. We were our own worst enemy. Gifted them a goal, you know, trying to play out of the back, goalkeeper mistake. But we came back, you know, and that resiliency is something that we didn't show last season. Last season, we'd have crumbled. So we got 2-1 out of that. And then we drew last night at Stockport 1-1, which, again, on the face of it, is a good result. We missed a penalty, 5 minutes to go.
Fuck!
Yeah, Cook missed a penalty, and then he missed a really easy 1-on-1.
Fuck!
Just going into injury time, which would have won it. So, you know, you come away from that thinking, yes, 1-1 away at Stockport is a good result, but it feels like one of those games that you lost rather than you drew.
You alluded to at the start before we came on air that you're not happy.
Yeah.
What's up? What's going on?
So it's mixed feelings, honestly. It's like when we go forward, we look strong going forward. We look stronger going forward as a unit this season than we did last year. We've got high press. We've got more options. Patterson's doing really well that we got from Harrogate. He's got 3-3. So there's a lot to like going forward. At the back, we look like we've never played football before. And so without the ball, I'm really nervous. You know, positioning, they're struggling to get into this new formation at the back. We've got, you know, I said on Friday, I think, square pegs in round holes for wing backs. And, you know, maybe that just needs some additional work on the training ground, but maybe it's we're trying to do something that the current crop aren't capable of. And time will tell on that one. But
do you need different wing backs? Do you need to sign two new wing backs?
We need one wing back, left wing back. You know, we've been playing somebody who was a winger, who then was a midfielder, who's right footed at left wing back. And, you know, our other left back isn't, you know, he gets the ball, he can't cross, you know, he hits the first man every time. He's not that mobile up and down the flank. So that's causing us some problems. We've got a kid on loan from Brentford who actually in preseason looked really, really good, called Daniel Ogioki. I think that's how you pronounce it. You know, in the England setup, so he's got pedigree. He's just looked like, you know, he's not taken to it very well, to league football very well so far. He's been all over the place. And he's been either a right wing back, or they've tried him the right side of a back three, and it's not worked for either of those yet. So I just feel like there's some work to be done at the back, really.
And that's it? The only area?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, the two big players from last year in Harry Lewis and Andy Cook have both started pretty low on confidence. So, you know, hopefully that's just a confidence thing.
Yeah, it's early. Mm-hmm. It's early. I mean, look, Stockport were favourites to win the league, weren't they?
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think they've won any of their three league games, have they?
No, I mean, I guess if we're going to go there and beat them, this was the time, because they've started pretty slowly, but they're favourites.
Yeah, there was 9,000 people there last night, mm-hmm. wasn't there? It was a crowd. So, look, you know, again, I'd say to you, relax on the anxiety. You know, obviously the eyes don't tell lies. If things aren't working, look, Mark Hughes is an experienced manager. He's got to see what you're seeing. He's got to see what fans are seeing, that, you know what, we might need to get a couple of additions. If you're saying the only thing really missing that turns you into a really slick team is wingbacks, well, that's the beauty of having the window still open in August. Best laid plans haven't worked. Now we got to go out and get two that do work, because that's going to be fundamental to how we play. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, I think that, and I mean, somebody like Romney, you know, that's a big miss for us, because we've gone from having somebody who can play his way out of defense, who is composed on the ball, to three, you know, League Two big, not very mobile center halves, who don't have the passing accuracy that he did. So when you try and play out of the back, it's just a different dynamic than when you have somebody like Romney who can make things happen.
Yeah, and it's a bit like our thing with Ronnie. You know, him and Romney have got a great relationship. You know, they know left, right, you know, playing out. And if we don't, you know, the big thing for us will be the challenge is, we sell Ronnie. Do you go and get a dominant center half that's brilliant in the air? But most of those are fucking useless with their feet. They just are. They can't get you going. They can't pass. Their game is like fucking, it's bread and butter. Win everything in the air. Be physical, fucking, you know, spit, whatever. Or do you go and get somebody who's not as good in the air, who's brilliant with the ball at their feet? So, you know, I put that in the manager. I said, look, what do you want here? You know, Ronnie goes, do we get a scrapper or do we get a passer? Because the combined ones don't work. Well, we can't afford the ones that can do both. It's the reason we're selling one for millions. So, you know, it's one or the other. For me, I'd be like, forget about goals and set pieces and whatever. Sacrifice it to get the player who can pass. Because if you're going to base your whole game on passing, you're going to have to let certain things go. You're going to have to, if you're going to win enough games, you're going to concede a few set pieces. You haven't got dominant center halves in the air necessarily. But what you do have is a player that fits into what you're trying to do. Because if you put a player in there that cannot play the way you want to, it's going to fuck the whole team up. It's going to fuck everything up. You know, great, he's winning balls in the air, but you can't get going from the back. Because if they shut down your left side, and no, a good team managed is going to push everything to the player who can't play out. Press it over there, because what he's going to end up doing is kicking it 50 yards long.
Yeah, I'll make a mistake under pressure.
Correct. And that is the $50 million question. What is it to be? Because to go and get somebody who can do both, cost the fucking premium that League One clubs or League Two clubs like us.
Yeah. That's why Ronnie's in demand, right?
Correct. So it's one of them things. I hear you. I sympathize. And that's going to be the biggest decision for us. You know, what do you do here? You know, and my thing would be go for the passing center back, but the manager will make the ultimate decision. So, you know, because I believe in what we're trying to do and I don't want anything to fuck that up.
And I think we looked at it and said, well, promoted teams last year out of League Two typically went with strong cloggers, you know, at the back as opposed to somebody with a bit more of a cultured foot. And so that seems to be the direction that we've gone at the moment.
When you have three, you have to have one.
Yeah.
When you look, Brentford built promotion based on three big strong centre-backs, but one of them could always play. One of them, the one that would give it to the six, give it to the wing-back. So that's something that, yeah, it's in theory, it's great. I'm not going to lie. We're in the champ. I'd want three big center halves because of what I've seen, what, you know, the champ's like. But one has to play. And if you have three who can't play, you've got a problem. If your whole game is based on playing football and using Smallwood and using the players in midfield and getting it out wide and whatever, and he can't get the ball from the center backs, it's done.
Many times we've seen our center, the middle of the three, Matty Platt, you know, basically trying to put Beckham balls into the box, and that's not going to work, you know, with all the best will in the world.
Forget it. You know, and what's going to happen is away teams, opposition teams are just going to press you through. They're just going to be like, who's the weakest link? Press it so he gets it. You know, and then that's just one of the oldest tactics ever, you know, seen it a million times. So, well, that's interesting. Who have you got your next couple of games?
Let's see. Morecambe on Saturday.
Okay.
I'm not sure who we've got after Morecambe, but it's Morecambe away on Saturday.
Okay. So, like us, you got like two away games back to back kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, you'd expect to go there and do the business now?
I mean, you would think so, but Derek Adams and the history brings, you know, those kind of games. It was like you playing against Steve Evans.
Of course.
If anyone's going to be up for it, it's going to be Derek Adams getting his team up for giving us a stuff in.
100%. Fucking wow. Are you going to lose anyone before the window closes?
I don't think we're going to lose anybody who we would want to stay. Okay. I think that it's more around getting squad players out of the building. And we've started to do that. You know, we let a kid called Jake Young go out to Swindon on loan. Ryan East, who's a centre midfielder, went out to Rochdale on loan. So it's just freeing up that. Because we're, I think, in a similar position to you. You know, you need players to go out before you can really bring them in. So it's getting some of these, freeing up some wage budget so that we have something left in the tank for the last week or so of the window.
Makes sense. Who did you draw in the League Cup?
Wrexham away.
Oh, of course, the Hollywood stars. So, yeah, that'd be interesting. So, mm-hmm. They haven't announced the TV games yet, have they?
They have, but it's not us.
Oh, wow. Fucking shock.
I think they decided they've got to alternate between Wrexham and Salford round by round.
Are Salford back on TV again in the next round?
I think they got Leeds in the next round.
Of course. There we go. Fucking hell. Unbelievable. Oh, well, it is what it is.
So if Wrexham get through, I'm sure they'll get the third round game. And if we do, then we won't be seen on TV. I mean, that's the interesting thing because Sky talk about, you know, new deals for the EFL, more football that's being played. There's still no League Two games scheduled for being on Sky.
Don't even talk about them and their setup and the, the quotas and everything they do. And we really, as an EFL, have to look at our product and how that's managed. We really have to get control of it, because when you look at the EFL highlight show on ITV, the Sky, we have to have more say. We have to be able to say to them, you know what, not good enough. You know what, that's not how we want our product delivered. And you know, put your quota crap to the side and hire the best people for the job, because that's not happening, in my opinion. I don't give a fuck if they're women, men, black, white, whatever. Put the best fucking people in the jobs. And you look at it and you hear it and fucking nonsense, honest to God. It's just complete virtue signaling quota fucking nonsense. And when we do our TV deals, we have to get control of that side of things. Otherwise, it's no deal. Because that's our product. That's what people around the world are listening to or watching. And for me, it's not good enough. It's not good enough. And I could say the same about some of the Premier League, the new footage and the new shows and what they're doing and the dynamics they're trying to break up. Not good enough.
I've not seen any of that, you know, with being back home, but I've seen the social media, you know, comments around the quality of the broadcasts so far this season.
Yeah, and everyone's frightened of saying it for what it is, because they get called misogynist or they get called racist, they get called whatever. Forget all that. It's about the quality of the product. Don't take shows that are already working and fuck with them as you're trying to pigeonhole people in. You know, don't put people in. You know, Graeme Souness was binned. You know, he'll say he retired and everything else, but he was binned, you know, by those, you know, both most likely. And, you know, he's somebody I enjoy listening to on Sky, you know. And now I've got fucking all sorts of crap going on match day. It's just like it's a distraction. You know, I want analysis. I want arguments between pundits. I don't need third wheels getting in the way of that. I want to see, you know, proper fucking analysis. I want to see, you know, excitement, you know, the EFL highlight show. I'm watching them, whatever. I'm just like, God, invest something in this. Like, you know, get on proper people in this. You want to put women in, great, no problem. You want to put men in, great, but put the right people in. You know, not people that are just wooden, you know, and just no personality, no character, no whatever. So, I don't know. I haven't watched them. BT or TNT, as it's called, yet I haven't managed to see one of their games, so I'll hold my opinions on that until I see that. But like I said to you, you know, one of the best shows I enjoyed watching was the CBS show for the Champions League. You know, Kate something was the presenter. You've got Carragher, Henry, and Michael Richards, and it was just the formula was fucking fantastic, electric. You know, it'd be the equivalent of CBS going out and then putting a fourth person in and just completely, you know, or a fifth person in or whatever outside of it. So, you know, we need better people. We need better choices. We need, you know, to forget about worrying about quotas and worrying about, oh, this needs to be seen this way. This is our fucking product. And everyone can go on about it. But all you need to do is check the comments on most of these broadcasts when they put clips up on social media, and you will see that 90% of the comments agree with what I'm saying. And they're your payers. They're your people paying. They're paying for you to do those TV deals and pay wages to those people. So fucking listen to them. It's all very well, you know, newspaper journalists now going, it's so misogynistic. I can't believe you did that. No, they're your fucking paying customers. If you don't listen to your paying customers, what do we always say?
They obviously feel like people are going to pay to watch football regardless what the end product is.
Absolutely. And I go back to...
And that's one of the things of... I mean, that's one of the things of, that's getting these broadcast deals, isn't it? Sport is the one thing that people will watch live. And it's almost like, regardless of the packaging all around it, you may get some, the stragglers that are going to come because it's a good broadcast, but the rest of us are going to watch it, you know, whatever the quality of the broadcast is.
You know, I go back to being on Talk Sport. You know, entertaining Talk Sport is watching Eddie Hearn and Simon Jordan having a row. Listening to a Simon Jordan talk about the Chelsea financial situation and how they're doing that. When I see Carragher and Neville on a Monday night show or Friday night football, and it was Dave Jones mediating them two going at each other. And it was great. You know, they're the dynamics that you tune in for. They're the things you like. Don't fuck with what works. And that's what I'm trying to say. Go and get your Simon Jordans. Get him on TV. Get him on TV. But they won't do it. They won't do it because we might have said some things about them previously and whatever else. Go get the best fucking people on TV. You know, and I've listened to some of them, and some of them are absolutely fucking fantastic. Do you know what I mean? Go and get those ones. Like, I love Laura Woods, and I'm glad she's doing the BT thing. I think she'll be fucking superb at that. Do you know what I mean? The girl from CBS, you know, Sky should have been breaking their fucking neck to get her from CBS and put her on the EFL. have her do the EFL shows. Fucking absolutely phenomenal. Do you know what I mean? That's somebody who I thought, you know, that would be great for us as a product, you know, but she's a brilliant presenter.
It's the same for the NBC broadcast. So the US channels actually do a pretty good job, I think, of Premier League. I'm forgetting the name of her. She's done it, Rebecca, but I can't remember her name.
Yes, decent.
She's done it for quite a while.
Decent. They need more British people on. There's too many Americans on. Tim Howard, you know, ex-players who play. And I get it. You're going to a US audience, but...
Yeah, Taylor Twellman on everything. Yeah.
They weren't standout players in the Premier League, like with all due respect. So they need some, like, ex-Premier League players, actually, that had some serious merit in the game on those shows. I've seen them as well, and they need to be better. So that's my 2 pence worth over that. You know, regardless, it's like, get the best person in for the job, and they're not doing that. It's just the virtue signaling bullshit to try and appease people that aren't really the majority of your fee payers. Makes no sense.
So let's look at a couple of topics for the week and get into some questions as well. Sure. You know, you mentioned about Liverpool and Casado, but also now the lad from Southampton, who we talked about the other day of, we need to get that deal done. And all of a sudden that one's gone south again. So what's going on?
I don't know. I watched the Liverpool-Chelsea game and I hated what I saw. I loved what I saw until the Salah's goal was disallowed at 2-0. And from that moment on, I had trepidation. And it wasn't trepidation necessarily because we don't have a natural number six or a holding midfielder. It's watching the back line, particularly the left side of it. That concerned me a lot. Now I'm seeing articles about Alisson and Salah to Saudi and whatever. I'm just like, Liverpool have got a problem. And the problem starts with the director of football. They've obviously hired someone temporarily for the summer. I think a German guy who knows Jurgen Klopp. They have to find the next Michael Kennedy. They have to find somebody who's going to be with them for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Chelsea have done that. They've got the Brighton boys in there, you know, behind the scenes. They've got two of them. Liverpool need to go and get one. The window started well for us. I'm not sure it's going to finish well. But so this nonsense doesn't happen in the future. Go and get somebody who's here long term. Signing somebody on a contract for 3 months when there's an end date, waste of time, in my opinion. I am concerned. I've always said if we have Jurgen, we have a chance. But I'm now worried about we've got no fucking chance of Champions League. But unless the next 2 weeks are really impressive in the transfer window. I'm not trying to make salacious headlines. I'm not trying to dig out Liverpool, Klopp. Fair play to the owners, putting up money for Casado. Too little, too late. You know, and whoever fed back that he was interested in coming lied to them. Should have read that and sniffed that. It was all a ploy just to get Chelsea back to the table.
Do you think that's an agent thing?
100% it's an agent. Abso-fucking-lutely. The agent's played them a fucking... He's done them up. The agent's probably intimated to Liverpool, get a bid in, or we'll get a player there for a medical.
Yeah.
They've put the bid in. Suddenly the ignition, the rocket booster's gone under Chelsea's arse. We ain't getting beaten by Liverpool. The two big American owners are flying in. We've got Liverpool on Sunday on TV. There's no way they're parading Casado around fucking Stamford Bridge. So the agents played a fucking blinder, credit to them. But naive as well from Liverpool that they got caught in that position. So the Lavia one, I can't get my head around. I know, I'd heard this person, he wanted, up to 2 weeks ago, it was Liverpool he wanted to go to. So that's been allowed to simmer. You've then put it to the side and gone after Casado, thus telling Lavia, we're actually going to go, you know, do the deal for Lavia. And still go after Casado if you want to make a fucking statement, like fucking Chelsea have done. And now they're going to have the most frightening midfield the Premier League's ever seen. You saw United's midfield the other night. You know, yes, Arsenal have got Declan Rice, but Chelsea's midfield, fucking unbelievable. If they had an Ivan Toney in their fucking team, they'd win the league next year. Not this year, next year. That's the one thing now they're missing. And if they're going to sign the boy from Palace, who I love, Elise, just need that number 9. I like the guy who played on Sunday. I'm not sure he's going to score 30 league goals. But if they had a, and again, I'm not doing this to get my sell on. I do a podcast based on football. If Ivan Toney was in that team with that midfield and with that talent they have, if a full wing-back stayed fit, Chelsea would be able to stop them next year. Not this year, next year. So I think with the young, it's going to take time to bed in. I fancy them still to make top 4. But Liverpool, I am fucking, yeah, I'm worried. Like, and I guess my worry is, if Jurgen, if they don't make the top 4 this year, then the pressure starts on him. And he's the type of guy, fuck all this. I'll take the national team job, or Tuchel will be sacked by Bayern Munich by then. I'll go take that job. And then it's like, okay, now we're starting again. So they're my concerns, do you know what I mean? And it's like, so I see they're trying to sign the boy from Palace. No Casado, no Lavia. Fair play, good player. But yeah, I'm concerned they need to buy something at the back and they need to buy one, if not two, in midfield again. So, you know, playing Gapco in there on Sunday, hated that. Darwin Núñez needs to get the vote of confidence. I'm not sure you're winning Premier League titles with Jota as your number nine. I know that sounds harsh, and again, I don't want headlines in the papers me saying that, but Jota's a very good, useful player. He'll score goals. I'm just not sure you win league titles with him as your number nine. I just think Núñez has so much raw ability, and he's one of them players where the manager needs to say, Darwin, I'm giving you five games in a row. Give a fuck if you don't score in the first four. We're going to play you as our number nine, and I honestly think he could score 30-plus goals. But in and out, play him left, play him. Give him a fucking run. And watching on Saturday with Gapco and fucking midfield, lost in the game. Jota, you need Núñez in that team. You know, so they do the business at six. They bring in something at the back, because I'm concerned back there. Keep the players without selling to Saudi. Get Núñez scoring goals. Then I'll put everything on us finishing top four. If we don't do those things, it's concern.
Well, Harry Maguire is available for your position at the back again.
Next question, Philip.
What does he do now? I mean, we were talking on Friday all about, you know, him going to West Ham, and that seemed like a good move. And so now it looks like that's all broken down.
I would imagine that is. I love when I read all these pundits going, yeah, but, you know, he's owed a signing on fee and United will have to write him a check and da-da-da-da-da. Let me explain how this works. If I sign a player and every year he gets 20 grand signing on fee every August, if I go and sell him to a club where he's getting a good move and he's getting paid good wages, probably more than he's on with me, I get him to cancel the signing on fee that he's owed. He's not getting it. Otherwise, he stays. That's how it works in football. I don't have to pay a player who wants to get a move, who wants to go and play, a chunk of his wages. Now, if the other club's offering half his wages and he's still got 2 years left, I can then understand where you might have to do a deal. If the player just plants his feet in, I'm not saying he has done that, I don't know what's going on there. Look, Harry Maguire is a better player than everybody who wants to slag him off thinks. Gareth Southgate has him in every fucking England team. And he does, you know, he's a player that will play five more years at the top. His game's not based on pace. He's that old-fashioned centre-half. So I thought he was made for West Ham. So that's not West Ham's fault. That is probably a case of the Maguire team waiting for United to offer something before he goes and speaks to West Ham. That's just my opinion. So I don't know what United do there, but, you know, I'm not really interested. I actually thought fucking Wolves' midfield were more exciting. And by the way, if I'm Liverpool scouts, I'm looking at one or two of the central midfielders at Wolves, yeah? Because fuck me almighty, they had some fucking energy intangibles. And, they had some good players in there. I thought Gary O'Neill, for somebody who spent 5 days with a Wolves team, they should have won that game at Old Trafford. Should have won it, not drawn it, should have won the game. The amount of times, final entries, and you're not unbelievable. So that's the beauty of the Premier League.
So I want to ask, I was going to go to the Championship, but I actually had a question from Joseph Snowden, who's a Leeds fan, and they're kind of connected. He's a big fan of the pod, listen every week. I'm a Leeds fan. He says, I'm sure Phil will be glad to hear that. You know, the further I go away from living in Yorkshire, the less that the rivalry with Leeds is. So he's interested to know what you think about what's going on at Leeds. The best players having relegation clauses in their contracts, by the looks of it, allowing them to go out on loan for seasons without the club being able to sell them and then, you know, gaining any financial rewards. I think there's a little bit of unhappiness going on there.
Whoever put a fucking loan clause in for relegation needs to be lined up, shot, and never allowed work in football again. I don't know who did those deals. The guy that was there before, I'm sure it's not the current ownership, but the idea that, yes, a relegation clause, you sign a player, a premium young player from Europe, their agent's going to go, well, Leeds could go down, so we're going to put a clause in. So Leeds have paid 20 million. If Leeds go down, 25 million. So they get their money back and a profit. But to allow a clause that states said player can go out on loan if his wages are paid for the season, where you get none of your fee back, the player can go on loan, have a shit season wherever they go on loan, and then completely lose their value. And worse than that, your team is weakened.
Because you can't reinvest that.
I feel sorry for the people who've now taken over fully that that's happened. And I feel sorry for the manager because they've lost some fucking key players. They're going to continue to lose players. I mean, they lost Harrison last week. One of the strikers doesn't want to play. And the worst part of this, they haven't really done any business. So I don't know if it's going to be like lastminute.com, where you're going to see Leeds sign five or six players. I've said this before. They are a fucking gigantic club. I think they're under good new ownership. I think they're going to be fine. I do think they're going to get back to the Premier League in the next 2 years. But they need to put the foot down on bringing in players to help Daniel Farke. And they need to, that needs to happen from tomorrow onwards with 2 weeks left in the window. So that late in the window, they haven't got issues with it. And they need to learn that never again do you ever agree to put a loan clause in. Sell clause, fine for relegation. Loan, fucking move on to another player. So that was just bad business from the previous like hierarchy, allowing that to happen. And I feel for the Leeds fans.
Now, when you let somebody go on loan, what impact does that have on financial fair play? Does the wage get taken out of that for the duration of the loan?
Yes, it frees up. So if right now Peterborough is at its maximum with the financial fair play or whatever it's called in our league, with the 60% rule, if we let a player go on £4,000 a week, it means we now have £4,000 a week in space. So we effectively to go and sign a replacement player on £4,000 a week or go and get two players and £2,000 each week. So you can get two, three players as long as it amounts to £4,000 a week.
So say you loan somebody for a year.
Yeah.
The replacement you bring in, can you only bring them in for that year, or you just basically figure out the consequence when the player comes back on loan and you go back over?
So yes, in theory, you can only bring them in on the wage to offset what's gone out. What you're saying is, can you buy a player on top of that with a transfer fee and everything else? It all depends on your numbers and the percentages and your losses. So, you know, Leeds, for me, won't be under any financial pressure of fair play. I don't think that's the argument here. Yes, they've spent money the last 2 years, but they brought in considerable amount. I mean, they brought in hundreds of millions, I think, in fees and sales as well. So I don't think they're in breach of anything like that. So Leeds could go and spend 30, 40, 50 million in this window, in my opinion, if they want to. And they're probably going to need to.
So one of the players refusing to play, or reportedly refusing to play, have you had a player refuse to play for Posh?
We had a player, obviously, Lee Tomlin, who wanted to move. He never refused to play, but he didn't at times play to his best ability, you know, particularly the day Celtic came in for him where he was, you know, he was off by halftime and he was in the stands texting with his agents and he destroyed the manager's office before. He knows I've said all this before and I love Lee, but he never outright refused and said, I don't want to play for the club. I had a player last year in the Championship ring me on a match day who basically refused to come up and play and travel from up north to come down and play, who was trying to force through a move. I did have that happen. But they used wellness or family issues and, you know, as the reason they couldn't play. It wasn't, I don't want to play.
Because you refusing to play for you, right.
Right, but for me, it was pretty much the same thing. So, you know, that did happen last year. And I just dug my feet in at that point. You know, if that hadn't happened, I'd probably have sold that player, even though the manager didn't want to sell him. But sometimes my, you know, pride will get... If a player does that to me, I'll go the other way and go, do you know what? Sit in the fucking stand.
It sets a bad example for everybody else, doesn't it?
Terrible. Terrible. We've had players during this window, a couple of them still with us, where we've had offers for them, and the players have come and asked the manager, and the manager's been really honest and said, look, it hasn't met the club's criteria. So you're going to have to get your head down. You've done really well. We're probably going to keep you. And the players have been fine. They've asked the question, but they've not refused to play. And in fact, when they have been called upon and they've come off the bit, they've been fucking brilliant for us. So I touch wood, we haven't got any of those shenanigans. I've never really had that. Even Ivan, back in the day, when his dad and him came to see me about when we'd had bids a year prior to him going to Brentford, he never refused to play. Never ever, like, you know, Sammy Schmodics. No, not those kind of characters. They might be angry. They might be pissed off. They might be like, oh, this is life-changing. But when they go out on a match day, you couldn't hold them back from playing. They wanted to play, and they put everything into it. So I will always give them credit. It's funny, we spoke last week about Sammy Schmodics and about Joel Randall and run, Joel, run. You know, and a classic example of what I was trying to say was Sammy played on Saturday, fucking misses a penalty, gives the first goal away to the other team, has a fucking stinker. Most players fold. At that point, they're substituted, and that's the end of the day. Not that fucking kid. He scores two goals. Do you know what I mean? And leads the comeback, because that's the character. That's what I meant about, they're not always players, the best technical players, but that, what's inside, gets them to the top. I've seen a million technical talented players not getting anywhere near the Championship, never mind the Premier League, but the ones with that and those, the minerals, are the ones who go all the way.
How do you judge that when you're recruiting? Because it's easy to recruit. Well, easy, I say with air quotes, easier to recruit based on technical ability, but it's harder to find those intangible attributes.
Very tough to do that for a 20-year-old, because a lot of the time they're hasn't developed, the character hasn't come out. Some you could see. Some would say if you saw Smodic at 20 for Colchester, you could see he had that already. You know, we saw that in Gale, we saw it in Assemble Longo. We saw, you know, Ivan Toney, he probably didn't at 20. He was a lone ranger going around everywhere and growing up. So it's very difficult. Sometimes you recruit, you have that question mark about that mentality side of things, and then hopefully you help develop it over the next 2-3 years. You know, Hector looked like a blue-eyed boy last year when we recruited him. Now he's a fucking killer. So at the age of 20 to 21, 22, he's learning, he's developing, he's getting hungrier, and it just, the penny drops. And that happens with some young, others it doesn't, some it does with, you know what I mean? So it's the eye of the tiger. You know, you look at Joel Randall playing at the moment. Last night was a great test for him. He missed an absolute sitter right on just before halftime to put us one up. Great passage of play. He's in on goal. Just has to slide it down to the side of the goalie. Misses the chance. Joel Randall a year ago would have gone to pieces and been substituted 10 minutes later. Nope. Fucking brilliant in the second half as he kept running, kept at it, kept doing it. That's the change of mindset. We're seeing that now at 23. From 21 to 23, he's growing up. He's realizing one bad moment in a game should not affect the rest of the game. Just like Sammy Smodic says, two fucking bad moments in a game. No, I'm going to affect the game. That's what great players do. That's what great characters do. That's what you need in your dressing room.
Is that coachable?
Yes. I think it's coachable from management. It's coachable from ownership. It's coachable from people who are older. When I sit and I talk to young people, the things I put in their brain, the ideas that you can implant, I'm not trying to take credit here. I'm just saying that, you know, with young people all the time, you're trying to make them see things differently. Make them feel different things. Make them deal with adversity differently. Make them deal with criticism, trolling, rejection in a different way. You know, my lawyer was on to me this morning. Her daughter's got her A-level results tomorrow. And they're all, you know, not in panic mode, but hoping everything goes well because how she's going to react. And I just said, listen, tell her, good old D-Mac here got 2 C's and a B for his A-levels because I never opened a fucking book and spent one day at college in Ealing before I walked out. So it's not all as lost if it doesn't all go to plan on the exam side of things. That's not, that doesn't define who you are, and nor should it. So yeah, so again, coachable, yes. You know, I just think you with your kids, me with my kids, my life, everything's a coachable moment. You're always trying to help and coach people. Especially as we get older, I'm nearly 50. So you're constantly doing those things.
All right, well, let's leave it there for this week. Well, I think next week there's only one game, isn't there? Is the midweek next week?
Or there is. Yeah, so we'll do it mid. Well, next, obviously, the start of next week or whatever else we'll cover off. Brilliant.
But I want to thank everybody again for listening. Questions. Again, I've got some questions that are going to run over. We'll run those over into next episode. But do please keep them coming. Contacts@hardtruthfootball.com. You can always follow us on YouTube. The videos go to YouTube a couple of days after we post on Anchor and across all the podcast networks as well. So, you know, just keep those questions coming, keep subscribing, and keep telling anyone if you like the show that, you know, it's worth listening to.
Thanks, all.
Until next week, we'll see you all soon.
Take care, guys.